Okay, next Hall of Famer, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, better known to us as the Ramban. Ramban was born 1194 in Girona, Spain, the area it's called Catalina. This is about 100 kilometers north of Barcelona, on the northeast part of Spain near the border with France. Now, he lived in this area most of his life. Ramban lived at the time of the decline of the Golden Age of Spain. Jews lived in Spain for 750 years, up until 1492. This is almost as long as the Jews lived in Lithuania and in Poland, which is roughly 900 years. And in a few short years, centuries of Jewish life were erased. Right? This is such a long period of time. Now, by comparison, you think about the Jews in the United States, large amounts of Jews living in the United States, maybe only 100 years. 750 years went down the drain. Now, the Jews felt themselves to be more Spaniards than Jews. How do we see this? In 1492, when given the choice of leaving the country or staying but becoming baptized, half the Jews were baptized. Okay, we look at it and we say that's an amazing amount of people that stayed and were baptized. Although, unfortunately, I think that if this was done in the United States today, you'd probably have a lot more than half that would choose to be baptized rather than have to leave the country. So this was the way the Jews felt about life in Spain. There were more Spanish than there were Jewish. In Spain, the Ramban was a doctor. Many Jews and Muslims became doctors, while Christians rarely did. And that's because Christianity was much more fatalistic. It was a much more fatalistic religion. Their view was, if you're sick, it's because you're a sinner. Why should anyone get involved? Jews became doctors. Many Talmidei Chachamim became doctors, not just in the Middle Ages, in the Talmud as well. Because if you're a Talmud Chacham, you're already an expert in animal anatomy, and therefore you had a basic understanding of human anatomy. For example, a trepha is the same for both an animal and a human being, and therefore understanding human anatomy was essential. Also, Jews were pharmacists, dispensing medical treatment and advice. But in Central and Eastern Europe, we don't find many Jewish doctors because there the society was very superstitious. If a patient died, the family would blame the Jewish doctor for cursing him. The Ramban accepted upon himself to become a doctor, but he was nervous that the lure of money would occupy his time and cause bittul Torah. And therefore, he took upon himself to only treat poor people for free. Now, this is a very noble idea, but his plan backfired. He became known as the famous doctor who would work for free, and therefore there were lines around the corner, and he was working as a doctor 10 to 12 hours a day. So he decided to take upon himself assistance, and he himself only worked a couple of hours a day. But aside from treating patients, he also gave medical advice to both Jewish and non-Jewish doctors. His rabbanim had a tremendous influence on him, as we will see as we discuss the Ramban's life. One, Rav Natan ben Meir, was a staunch defender of the Rif, and another, Rav Yehuda ben Yakar, he was both a Kabbalist and a student of the Balei HaTosfos. Okay, as we'll see, these have tremendous influence on his life. His colleagues include Rav Meir HaLevi Abulafia, known as the Yad Rama. Although he himself was much older than the Ramban, he viewed himself as a chaver. Another one of his colleagues, Rabbeinu Yonah, who was a first cousin and later on will become a mechutin of the Ramban. Now, his students include the Ra'ah. The Ra'ah, most understand he is the author of the Sefer HaChinuch. Also, students of the Ramban include the Rashba and Rabbeinu David. We don't really have a Ramban on Masechet Pesachim, but we have Rabbeinu David quoting his Rebbe, the Ramban, all the time. The Ramban had a great influence on his students. in many incidents in his life, the Ramban can be viewed as the great defender. Okay, he would always defend the older Gaon against the younger attacks. So, for example, we already said, let's start with the Rif. We already said that based on his Rebbe, he was a staunch defender of the Rif, he had this great affinity for the Rif. And therefore, for example, the Rif failed to write a commentary on three mesechtot that were halacha lemaisa. The Rif only wrote a mesechtot or halacha lemaisa, but three of them he didn't write on. The Ramban wrote a commentary in the style of the Rif on Nedarim, Chan, Chala, and Bechoros. He did this to complete the writings of the Rif. He did this at the age of 15. Okay, what were we doing at the age of 15? While still a teenager, he wrote a commentary called Milchemes Hashem to defend the Rif against the attacks of the Baal HaMaor. Again, we see the influence of his Rebbe, the importance of defending the Rif. He also defends the Bahag. The Baal Halachos Gedolos is an 8th century Gaon who wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot. Now we know from the Gemara in Makos that there are 613 mitzvot. The Gemara tells us that there's 248 mitzvot asei, 365 mitzvot lot asei, but the Gemara does not tell us what makes the cut, what's considered a mitzvah. And here you have, you know, discrepancies. The Bahag wrote his commentary. He listed his Targ mitzvot, his 248 and 365. And the Rambam, who came later, greatly differs from the Bahag. The Ramban wrote his Hasagot on the Sefer HaMitzvot, his addendums, and like the Ravid is printed alongside every, you know, Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, the Hasagot HaRamban is in every Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam. You have the Hasagot of the Ramban where he differs. Now, just as an interesting aside, in the Ramban's Perish Al HaTorah, he often attacks the Rambam, especially the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, who views many supernatural events as having happened in a dream. So if it says in the Psukim that three angels appeared to Avram and he was Mekai in the midst of Hachnasas Orchim, the Rambam says that was a dream. If the Torah tells us that Yaakov wrestled with an angel, so the Rambam Mor Nevuchim says that was a dream. And the Ramban takes great issue with this and says, obviously this happened. Now, the Ritva, who was a Talmud of the students of the Ramban, wrote a Sefer to defend the Rambam against the attacks of the Ramban. And he says in his introduction, I know the Ramban will be proud of me for writing the Sefer because I'm defending the earlier generations. Anyway, getting back to Sefer HaMitzvot, in the end, the Ramban counts 17 mitzvot lo taseh and 17 mitzvot aseh that he feels the Rambam left out. Obviously, then has to switch out, you know, other mitzvot and include these 17. Just a few examples. Mitzvot lo taseh, number one, he feels should be that one may never forget there is a God, not even for one moment. And mitzvot lo taseh, number two, don't forget Maimed Har Sinai. Neither of these made the cut in the Rambam. The Ramban says they are clearly mitzvot midaraisa, and they're counted mitzvot lo taseh. Mitzvot aseh, number four, the Ramban says, is to conquer and settle Eretz Yisrael. You may not even leave the land of Israel uninhabited, and kavachomer in the hands of goyim. Right, much ink has been spilled trying to understand Shitas Rambam for not writing it when we find the Rambam talking about the importance of living in Eretz Yisrael throughout the Mishneh Torah. But the Ramban felt that this had to be listed as one of the Taryag Mitzvot. He also livered at the height of the Maimonidean controversy. Here we are, one generation after the death of the Rambam, and Spanish Jewry was influenced by the view of the Rambam and studied philosophy. And this led to many becoming less observant in their mitzvah. because philosophy was held in such high esteem, the bulk of their thought and their attention was to that, and not as much as to Torah and mitzvah. Unfortunately, we see similar ideas in our generation, in many of our communities, where the secular knowledge of a doctor or a professor or a lawyer or the wealth of a businessman is often appreciated more than the chachma of the Talmud Chacham. And this is what you had in Spanish Jewry of this time, with a lesser appreciation for the importance of Torah and Mitzvah. Now, this was only amongst Spanish Jews who wanted to be like their Gentile neighbors. This was discussions that were going on in their communities. Ashkenazim didn't care about this. They didn't want to be like their Ashkenazi non-Jewish neighbors. The attacks against the Rambam originated in Provence. Provence was neither Spanish or Ashkenazi. It was small in number, but had a great many Talmidei Chachamim. And they came out against the study of philosophy and the books of the Rambam. One of the leaders was Rabbeinu Yonah. He was part of a Beis Din that made a cheirim on the books of the Rambam. Now, what's interesting is some of the greatest defenders of the Rambam also came from Provence. It was crazy in Provence at that time. So this Beis Din put the Rambam in cheirim, and another Beis Din, the defenders of the Rambam, they put the first Beis Din in cheirim. Okay. Now, in principle, the Ramban was against the Rambam because he felt it might lead to assimilation, but not for people on the level of the Rambam. It depends who you were. If you were on that level, then go ahead and study philosophy. Either way, the Ramban, Nachmanides, was totally opposed to Charamim. I've heard Rav Beryl Wine say on numerous occasions that in Jewish history, excommunication has always backfired and always made the person more popular than before. Here, the Charamim backwards and forwards caused a holy war. Everyone thinks that you're fighting Mechavet L'Shem Shemayim, so L'Shem Shemayim, it just continues. As the Mishnah says, Sofal Hiskayim. And it got out of hand. The anti-Maimonidean camp went to the church and claimed that the writings of the Rambam were anti the church. And in Provence in 1233, the books of the Rambam were burnt in public. After hearing this, King Louis IX burnt wagons and wagons of the Talmud in Paris in 1242. One of the keynote that we say on Tisha B'Av is about this occasion. When this happened, Rabbeinu Yonah and others viewed this as a punishment in Shemayim for what they did to the Rambam. And he personally went to each community that he had badmouthed the Rambam, and he said he was wrong. And he wrote Shari Tshuva. We learn this till today. Shari Tshuva with an entire perek about being Mevazet Talmidei Chachamim. And he swore he'd make it to the kever of the Rambam in Tveria and beg his forgiveness. But he died before ever getting there. Now, after this, people were finally receptive to a compromise, and the Ramban comes up with one. He takes into account the location. He says French Jews don't really need philosophy. They were pure thinkers, no need to learn the Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim. But Spanish Jews, they were philosophical thinkers, and they needed the Rambam to refute the philosophical influences. Plus, one only should begin studying these Svarim after the age of 25, when you've already filled your stomach with Torah, with Talmud, with Poskim, then you can move on. Now, the Rambam's works, of the most often used, we have the Chidushim on Shas. Since he's influenced by his Rebbe, who we said was one of the Balei Tosfos, he writes in the style of Balei Tosfos. Up until then, in Spain, the learning was to glean the halacha, and not necessarily to understand the text of the Gemara. And he, the form of the Balei Tosfos, he tried to understand the basic hakira upon which the sugya was based. But he's most famous for his Perush al HaTorah. He combines expertise in Talmud and respect for tradition, with the knowledge of philosophy and Kabbalah and linguistics. Although he defends tradition, he doesn't back off from difficult questions. His parish was held in such high esteem that he has many mefarshim, his mefarshim on the Ramban. In fact, Rabbeinu Bachaye is all a parish that elaborates the ideas of the parish HaRamban al HaTorah. While Rashi looked at the little picture, word for word, Ramban looks at the big picture. He looks at ideas, he looks at themes. For example, the famous Maisa Avos Sim Levanim. This is very similar to the parish Rashi and Tosos in the Gemara. While Tosos has less entries, it's hard to tell who has many more words in their commentary, Rashi or Tosos. So too with Rashi and Ramban. It could be that the Ramban in some Praka may have only 3 to 8 entries, but he deals with themes. He has respect for, but doesn't shy away from criticizing, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and the Ramban. He'll quote Midrashim, but then often say afterwards, V'al pi apshat, and he'll give a different interpretation. He often differs with Ibn Ezra in that he hardly will hold from the concept of Ein Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah and tries to figure out how chronologically everything makes sense where it is. And hundreds of times he will give, along with his parish, he'll give a parish al-pshi pshat of the Kabbalah, beginning with the words al-derech ha-emes. He also doesn't shy away from criticizing the Avos, either saying that we can learn from the Avos, both positively and negatively. For example, Avraham sinned going down to Egypt and saying that Sarah was his sister. Sarah sinned with her treatment of Hagar. And he goes on to talk about the implications that these sins had for the future of Jewish history. His parish, Al-Chumash, is probably the most famous parish after Rashi al-HaTorah. Now, the 13th century saw many apostates. One such apostate was Pablo Cristiani, who convinced King James of Aragon that he would be able to show in a public debate with the Ramban, the leader of Spanish Jewry, that Christianity is true and the Talmud says so. He convinced the king that once the Ramban would admit this, all the Jews will line up to convert. And as a reward, he wanted to be named Archbishop. Now, this guy had been in the yeshiva of the Ramban before he became an apostate. Imagine the heartache this debate must have caused the Ramban debating with a former fellow student. 1263, the debate, the king gives the Ramban freedom of speech. The Ramban had originally said, I'm not going to debate with both hands tied behind my back. Can never, you know, speak my mind because of fear of making the church look bad. And the king granted the Ramban freedom of speech. This had never been done before. And after this debate, it was never done again. The Ramban wipes the floor with him. The Ramban says, quote, you say the Messiah has come? Woe to the world that looks like this after the Messiah has come. And he goes on to say the best proof of the Jews being chosen by God is our survival, surrounded by hostile nations like a lamb surrounded by 70 wolves. Imagine what the Ramban would say today, looking at the survival of Medina Israel. After 3 days, the debate ends and the king says, quote, I never saw someone who, although mistaken, makes such a convincing argument. And he rewarded the Ramban with 300 gold coins. It's probably like a plaque in the Ramban's basement or there, you know, the contribution from the king to the yeshiva. Anyway, that Shabbat in Barcelona, King James came to the Ramban's shul and preached the correctness of Christianity. The Ramban then asked if he still has freedom of speech. It was granted, and then he gave a rebuttal, defending Judaism beautifully. This became written up in the Kitvei HaRamban, the drasha called Torah Hashem Tamima. And this essentially stopped all conversions of Jews in Spain. At this time, the culture was that it's okay to convert the way Jews in America think it's okay to intermarry. So it was okay. And the Ramban's beautiful defense of Judaism put an end to this. Christian organizers of the debate began to spread rumors of the Ramban's loss to Pablo Christianity. The Ramban was so offended that he decided to publish the records of the debate. He had written every single day, word for word, the debate, and now he published the debate. And now these very same Christian organizers went to the king to have him killed for disrespecting the church. Freedom was given for the oral debate, not for a printed record. The king declined, but then they got the Pope involved. And the Ramban, after he's warned by the king, viewed this as an excuse from heaven to leave his responsibilities in Spain and finally make Aliyah a lifelong dream. 1267, he makes his way to Eretz Yisrael. He makes his way to the port of Akko. The Rav there is Rabbi Chiel of Paris, one of the Balei Tosfos. And then he makes his way to Yerushalayim. There's barely a minyan in Yerushalayim. He builds a shul. He sets up a yeshiva. 1 year later, Rabbi Chiel dies. And the larger community of Akko petitions for him to come and be the Rav there. And he returns and he becomes the Rav in Akko until his death in 1270. While in Eretz Yisrael, he revised parts of his Perush al HaTorah. Now that he was in Eretz Yisrael, he realized he had made some geographical mistakes. For example, location of Kever Rachel, Amrat HaMachpelah. He talks also about ancient coins in Kitav Ivri that had symbols of the blossoming staff of Aaron and the cask of Mun. It was also from Eretz Yisrael that he wrote his famous Igeret HaRamban to his son to instill modesty, keep from sin, to be Sameach B'chelko, learn Torah, do mitzvahs, and do introspection day and night. He told him to read this letter weekly, and we today, Baruch Hashem, also study this letter at Igeret HaRamban. When my Rebbe, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, was asked, who from all of Jewish history would you like to meet, based on his broad knowledge and being expert in so many fields, without hesitation, Rav Lichtenstein's answer was, Rav Moshe Ben Nachman, the Ramban. Thank you very much.